Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler. And today, we are talking about parenting so our kids can launch. I know for me, I was shocked at how quick the day came that my kids were out in the real world and we were empty nesting. And they say launch, people say launch. I just went, my house is empty. So I had so many questions when that happened. It was like the minute they actually took that last thing out of their bedrooms, I went, are they ready? Did I screw them up too much? What should I have done? What could I have done differently? There were so many questions.
I know, Judy, it does. It goes by so fast, and mine aren't launched yet. They are not out in the real world. But when my oldest hit 18, the big shocking moment for me was we went to the doctor. And it's not like I had gone into their physicals or anything, but we walked in the office and I was completely cut out of that process. And it wasn't that it was a problem. It was just that moment as a parent where you go, oh my gosh, they're 18, they're an adult. And actually this was the one area that I realized, I'm like, I didn't prepare them to deal with the medical community. They weren't sick. They didn't have to participate in it. And oh my gosh, I forgot to teach them how. And so it just makes you start questioning everything you're doing. And I just, so it makes me happy that we are going to be covering this today.
Exactly. And that is why I am so excited to have Dennis Tratine here with us today. Dennis is the author of two books that I devoured. The first one is Parenting for Launch, and the second one is What I Wish I Knew at 18. I needed that book when I was 18, Dennis. I know his mission is to inspire and equip the next generation with leadership and life skills that can help them succeed in adulthood. He has books, he has curriculum, he's an awesome speaker, he has a blog, he wears a lot of hats as he serves young people around the world and helps us parents and educators and mentors guide them to their best life. So thank you so much for being here with us today, Dennis.
Oh, Sandy and Judy, it's great being with you.
So Dennis, I can see so much value in this book, but before we start really digging in and putting you on the hot seat, I'm just curious, what made you write the book?
Sure. Well, it actually was nothing I ever imagined. I had an amazing 30-year career in the investment management business where I worked for an incredibly successful company, and my job was evaluating leaders all around the world. And back in 2008, I decided I wanted a career change of basically leaving that industry and pouring my leadership skills into young people. So I was a board chair of a local private school and offered to be a full-time volunteer to set up a leadership and life skills curriculum. And they gave me the green light for that. And so away I left my investment management highway into full-time leadership work with young people. And then a few months later, after I developed my curriculum, I experienced what you just described earlier, Judy. And that was, my son was 2 weeks away from leaving for his freshman year of college, and I went through what I call the mother of all dad moments. It was a Sunday evening, and I'm thinking, how do I make the most out of this last 2 weeks? Have I covered everything? What do I need to reinforce? And I felt so convicted. I came down into our this very den, and opened up a Word document and typed up all the life wisdom I could ever glean from my life as a leader and evaluating leaders. And when I shared this list with a number of leaders in my life, they all said the same thing. You must turn this list into a book because you've defined a successful life for young people, most of whom aren't getting this anymore. So honestly, on their encouragement, I turned my list for my son into a book that is now training up young people all around the world. And that's where it started. But then through our parenting talks and our work with educators, to a person, they would ask whether or not we've written a book directly to parents, whereas my What I Wish I Knew at 18 book was messaged directly to the teenager, young adult, equipping them individually. But what about parents? Can you do something directly to them? And that's where my editor and I co-authored the book Parenting for the Launch. So now our focus is on the younger generation and all of the people like you in your parenting roles, like educators, like mentors, who are pouring in and training up the next generation. Mm-hmm.
I love that you guys are hitting both the parent and that teen demographic, because that's something that we are so committed to at Dassium. Because I think in order to help our kids, we've got to hit it from both sides. And you talk about parenting to launch and the need for that parenting book. So where my mind instantly went was, are we not doing that? Are we not preparing our kids to launch as a society?
The answer is we're not doing what we need to be doing. And we can do a lot better. And in many cases, it's the schools and the parents thinking that the other is responsible for certain territory. Finance is a great example. Shouldn't finance be taught in schools? The answer is unequivocally yes, but in the overwhelming majority of cases, they're not. But parents think their kids are learning this stuff. And so you get this issue of parents and educators thinking the other is covering the ground. Well, who's losing in that battle? It's the kids. So part of it is a lack of training academically for preparation for the next step. The high schools are mostly providing the courses that will get their students into college. They're doing relatively little in the area of requiring all students to take college and career prep courses that go beyond resume writing and really talk about the leadership skills you need as an independent adult. So that's one area I would say the educators need to step up their game to be more relevant in preparing their graduates for the next step. But also parents are, despite their best intentions, are pursuing parenting styles that are actually counterproductive. Whether it's performance parenting, whether it's helicopter parenting, whether it's what we call buddy parenting, where your kids are your best friends rather than you're the parent. There are just a lot of things that are going on that are really inhibiting the kids from becoming an adult and succeeding in adulthood.
And all of those things that you're talking about, how does that show up in our kids? Like, what is it? How does that look?
Okay. So let's talk about some of the most common parenting styles, performance parenting. So these would be the kids who feel that their identity and their worth is defined by their parents as far as how they perform, what their GPA is, are they the captain of the team, you name it. So the kids feel like their performance is more important to their parents than the person. Well, what that does is it causes massive anxiety when they leave home because the pressure to perform, especially in a new competitive environment, is huge. It causes tremendous resentment downstream in the adult years. And those are probably among the greatest issues. There's a lack of self-worth and value. And it's frankly, it's among the saddest things we come across when we see all these incredible kids who are fragile because they just don't see their value. The helicopter parenting situation is probably the most common. And where you see that reflected is in kids not being able to problem solve for themselves. It's almost a codependent relationship between the child and the parents. And you see a lack of resilience, a lack of self-confidence. How are they going to be able to navigate the world on their own if they've had their parents as their direct appendage almost while they're still in their upper years in high school? And then the last common parenting style that is also very worrisome is, we call it buddy parenting. Others call it permissive parenting. There are just a number of different definitions for it, but it's when the parents are so focused on keeping their kids happy. That's what the definition. They want peace at home. They want their kids to be happy, that they really become more of a peer and a friend as opposed to a leader and guider and mentor. And when that relationship breaks down, what you see are a number of very common things nowadays. Number one, a lack of motivation on the part of the kids, especially boys. We are seeing this increasingly common. We're seeing addiction, especially to technology, because if you're a teenager and you're basically given carte blanche of doing whatever you want to do so that you keep mom and dad happy, you're going to probably spend half of your day on video games or whatever. Well, there's a huge opportunity cost that they're not realizing. And then the last is disrespect for authority. And this is pervasive out there. We hear this all the time from teachers in high schools about how they're being treated. Well, if the parents aren't teaching them how to treat adults and how to treat authority figures and really taking that leadership role and preparing them for independence and to be a leader, these are the things that are going to happen. And it's very consequential to the parenting style.
Wow. So what does work? I mean, this was a lot of what doesn't. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, as I'm sitting here, I'm going, I wouldn't say any of those is my parenting style, but I can certainly see moments that I helicoptered for my kids, although it's not a big one for me. Judy is the self-proclaimed helicopter parent, although she says that, and I don't necessarily agree. But, you know, and in the this buddy style, this permissive parenting, when you said buddy style or permissive, that didn't ring a bell. But the focused on keeping things happy at home, keeping the kid happy means less hassle for the parents. I'm like, I've seen moments of that. And I fight back against those moments. But it just made me realize that, you know, as parents, as we're listening, we might be seeing ourselves in here. What mm-hmm. I'd kind of like to know is, and also you've told us these don't work. You've told us what happens to our kids. So what does work, and where can we maybe find ourselves and go, oh, I'm doing some of the right things and I need to do more of those.
You bet. Well, first of all, in the spirit of full disclosure, we all fall into these traps, you know, because we're so busy, we're working the day-to-day with our kids. We want them to succeed, and we want to have a good relationship, but it's like anything else. The pendulum can go too far. So in chapter one of our Parenting for the Launch book, we take this issue on head on, and the chapter is called Give Them Wings, Not Strings. And what we always share with people is during that launch time, imagining that you're releasing an eagle to soar to fulfill their dreams, or are we releasing a kite that we continue to hang on to for dear life and control and manipulate or whatever? If we can convince ourselves and have this just be our own internal mantra that we are responsible for training a self-confident, well-adjusted, independent future adult, rather than we're raising a child, we're really raising a future adult. That honestly helps frame everything. And so that's number one. It's almost like having that philosophy and that goal in mind as you go through your daily parenting. So one of the key things that you have to do as a parent to do this is you have to increasingly start treating them as an adult. And that means giving them more decision-making responsibility, letting them fail, letting them take risks, and not always being there to shore them up. I mean, letting them go through those learning experiences that we all need. So in our family, I know one of the most important things that we did is we gave our kids more and more responsibility. They all want more privileges, but you also want to attach responsibilities to those privileges and make sure that you are treating them more and more like an adult. You're talking to them more like an adult. When they push back on you, which they will often do, it really helps to explain why it is that this is so important. So instead of just saying, you know, shut off your cell phone or, you know, time's up for your video games and then you get flack, they need to understand the bigger picture of why it is that too much of that kind of thing is actually harming our kids and harming their success. So there are reasons that we do what we do, but having a great communication system with our kids, a great relationship, and increasingly giving them the responsibilities that you know they are going to need to know how to do when they're on their own, those are all the kinds of things that will help set them up.
Okay, so I'm laughing because I can also see examples of when I did what you told me to do, but my reason for doing it was because of the stress and the pressure of this child in the house. It was, you know, this going, it was kind of tying in doing something good because I have a kid who's pushing back. Mm-hmm. And I'm exhausted from her pushing back. So one of her things was she wanted to do every activity under the sun. And so finally I said, like you said, okay, here's what rules activities, time and money and passion. Obviously it's something you want to do. So the question is time and money. So I said, you need to talk to everybody, figure out like if she was driving, is there a car available when you need to go? How are you going to get back and forth? Because our kids did not have their own cars. And then the money piece, I finally just went at the beginning of the year, I put an activity budget together and I said, this is how much money you have for your activities. You decide. And I was completely out of the loop, but it was out of desperation, not inspiration.
but it was great strategic preparation. Sometimes we do it by accident. Sometimes yes. we do it, but it's all good. But I'm so glad you brought up the time aspect of it, because what young people need to understand, especially as they're getting into their, you know, their junior and senior year, I mean, sooner the better, but certainly by them, is their time is more and more valuable. And what it means is the more they waste their time, the more there is what we in the business world call opportunity costs. You're giving up more and more by wasting more and more of your time. So guess what happens nowadays on college campuses? Well, first of all, we have unprecedented dropout rates after the first year of college. We have significantly worsening college completion rates. We have anxiety levels in our student populations that are off the charts to the point where there is now a bull market in hiring therapists to work in colleges to meet the demand. Well, if you don't manage your time well and your kids don't have those disciplines when they are off on their own without the benefit of mom and dad waking them up in the morning or reminding them or whatever, they're not going to succeed. So whether it's accidental or whether it's intentional, it's all good. The mindset is we're training a future adult. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So that means, you know, and they may not like it, but it's for their own good. And one day they will thank you.
And so, go on.
I appreciate that verbiage, because another piece that I think comes into this is the pressure that parents get from society, from family, from other parents. I think that that was when it really started me thinking about is when you talked about performance parenting. Some of that is, you know, pressure on parents about, you know, how are your kids doing and what's happening here? Fear that parents have about the kids not getting into the right school, not succeeding, not having a happy life, a good life. But also just the intrusiveness of parents into kids' lives has really bled through our whole society. I have a daughter who's in college now, and regularly people will ask me, of course, you know, what are your kids doing? What's happening? And I'll say, well, she's looking at doing this and this and this. And they ask me a bunch of questions about it and what's she going to do and when she's going to decide. And I say, I don't know. And then they get mad at me because I don't know. But I've taken that hands-off approach of saying, she's in college. This is her life. She has to figure it out. If she's going to drop a major or add a minor, that's all up to her. It has nothing to do with me, but I get pushback from other parents. And your verbiage of I'm raising a future adult, I appreciate, because that's something I can say to the adults who are pushing me to push my kids.
Well, fabulous. And let me give you a couple of other little arrows in your quiver when you run across.
Okay.
Number one, one of the greatest disservices a parent or a school can do to their teenagers in high school is either directly or indirectly messaging that they know they have to know now exactly what they want to be when they grow up. They don't even know themselves yet. One of the biggest issues with kids is self-awareness. And if you don't know who you are and what your opportunities are, what you're gifted in, what you're joyful or what inspires you, etc., how on earth are you going to be in a position when you're 16 years old to know exactly what you want to follow in your career? You haven't even been exposed to all these careers. So all of these kids, that's the first question I ask of students when I'm giving talks. And that is, you know, how many of you know what you're going to major in when you go to college? And maybe half of them do and half of them don't. So I say, okay, for the half of you who didn't raise your hands, thank you for being honest. Don't worry one bit about your answer because you will figure it out. And for those of you who raised your hands, let me just give you a piece of advice. The average student changes their major two or three times in college. So don't go thinking that you are locked into this. If you find that it turns out not to be the major or career that you had ever intended, when you're finally starting to take classes in it and really understand, maybe talk to people in those jobs, you have every right to change your mind. So it's insanity. And it's causing kids anxiety. And boy, I am really hard when it comes to talking with parents. It's up to the kids to identify what their dreams are. It's up to us to help them, but it's not to steer them. And honestly, the most painful question I get from students, and I get this more commonly than any other question when I talk with student audiences, is, Mr. Tratine, how can you help me convince my parents to let me live my dream? They want me to live theirs. That is so sad. It is so sad, but it is so common. And the second thing I would just say is the parents are, in many cases, causing the students to feel like if they don't get into this exact college and take this exact major, which, of course, they took, and, you know, let's follow me, let's make another mini me, right, then they're not going to succeed. And it just does the kids such a disservice, because honestly, at the undergraduate level, you want to go to a good school, but it doesn't have to be that school, right? And especially if you're going to go on to your advanced degrees, it's going to matter more where you got your master's and PhD degrees from, frankly, than whether you got your degree from University of Washington or Stanford. It's just not going to matter. There's not one way to success. But the parents are messaging things, oftentimes, the performance parents, as though it is.
So if you're a parent and listening, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here. So if you're a parent out there listening and you're going, I just want to make sure that I protect my child. I want to save them so that they don't have the issues that I had growing up. I want to make sure that they don't have to suffer or deal with situations and they can learn from my experience. What would you say to the parent out here that is going, I'm identifying with a lot of those things that Dennis is telling me not to do, but I'm doing it from this place of, I want to empower them. I want to help them. For that parent that's identifying, going, oh my gosh, I've done it all wrong. Can I turn it around? You know, I want to help that person.
Well, absolutely. And a couple of things. One is you will see in our books, whether it's Parenting for the Launch or What I Wish I Knew at 18, that we are incredibly inspirational, encouraging, and practical. Because we don't just stay in theory land. Mm-hmm. No parent is a perfect parent. But I think if we keep our minds on the goal and we invest in our relationship with our kids and we help set them up to be self-confident and that their parents are confident in them too, the belief that they see, you see in them, is huge. That's the, as we call it, that's the wind beneath their wings. Mm-hmm. And so the whole question then is how do we go about teaching them what are the really important things to know? And it's really, frankly, it's more about the person they are. And I think we get a little bit caught up too much in the performance side of things, or we want them to succeed so much that we wind up honestly managing them.
So that brings up the point, and I know you touch on it in your book. It's kind of a twofold question. What is the ideal time to launch? When do you make that transition from driver to passenger? I'm using your own words, because sure, that is a huge piece of it. I'm in the driver's seat and I want to continue driving, but I know I need to move over and allow my kids to do what they do. I did that really well with my oldest. She wanted to graduate high school early, graduate college early, get on with her life. She knew what she wanted to do. My youngest, I could still drive his car all over the place if I didn't know how detrimental that would be. Yes. Through a lot of therapy. He struggled differently because he didn't know. He didn't have the self-confidence. And he used lots of unhealthy coping strategies that took him down a path that has made his life a lot more challenging. You know, he attempted suicide in college. He is that statistic that left college in his sophomore year and things. So for me as a parent, staying in that driver's seat to protect him feels like the good thing. And I know it's not. So could you just kind of touch on that? When do we shift from driver to passenger, and how do we do that effectively?
You bet. Well, and the way I would answer that is, once the middle school years start, that is an opportunity, honestly, to start this process. I mean, when they're in elementary school and obviously younger, it's a little bit difficult to do a lot, but things like chores are really important things that you can get your kids to be doing, you know, at a fairly young age. And so there are, what I would say is, be strategic about where are the areas you want to start moving over. What you don't want to do is suddenly go driver to passenger seat on graduation day. You want to do it gradually, so it becomes almost a seamless transition. And I think it's really more about building their leadership skills. It's about giving them responsibility. It's about introducing them to other great adults in your life that can also be mentors to them and offer great perspectives and some coaching and things like that, and also to help them build their networks. So we as a family were very strategic in introducing our kids to the great people that we know in our lives. And we started at a relatively early age in treating our kids like adults. So when we got the pushback, we were probably a little more tough love oriented. I remember my son, love him to death, but he was the one who was a little more volatile and would kind of push our buttons here and there. And our daughter was just the dream kid from a parenting standpoint, the kid on autopilot. So he would always get on our case that we love her more because we never yell at her. So I would sit down with Michael and I'd say, okay, Michael, here's the deal. We're not going to make up stuff to correct Laura and I, but we've simplified your situation in one of three things. If you think about the three things that you ever do, you are a wonderful kid. We love you to death. But there are three things that you do that will always cause us to correct you. It's this, this, and this. So if you want more peace on earth in our home, don't do this, this, and this. And I promise you, you'll get exactly what you want. And that's the way I used to talk with him. And, you know, eventually it sunk in. But back to your point, earlier the better. And just find those situations where you can move over. It may not be all in one fell swoop, but it's bit by bit. And it's also helping message to them that you are preparing them for independence.
So
and
you
that's
said,
why you're doing the kinds of things you're doing.
Yeah, you said chores. And I just want to go there for a second, because I think we tend to put that in a box. But the way you're talking about it isn't just, well, I'm giving you more chores that you have to do, but it's things like, in my world, I go, okay, family, you know, we need to eat. I have a busy week. Here are the meals that we're making this week. The food is in the fridge. Who wants to cook which day?
Yes.
And just make them in little ways part of the world in the same way that we interact with our spouse or other adults. Is that part of what you're telling us? Just
it's
bring them
exactly into right. Oh man, it's so right. And what you're basically saying is you're a team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? You're a team. And what you just described in your example is a perfect example of, okay, here's the situation. We all need to eat. We all need to contribute to the effort here. And so based upon interest, skills, et cetera, let's divvy up the responsibilities and change them up a little bit. So in some cases, you know, they come along and help do the shopping, you know, maybe with some oversight,
right.
But that gives them experience in how to actually be a good consumer.
Yeah. Or give them the short list with the money. Go.
Absolutely. So one of the best bits of advice, and we share this in, I think, the second chapter of Parenting for the Launch, is having a family mission statement.
Yeah, I didn't even get to go there because we're going to run out of time.
And also, you know, some families who are really strategic about this will get together on like a Sunday night or whatever, and they'll plan ahead for the next week. It's like, okay, these are our family goals and things that are coming up. So who wants to take what? It's not, will you do this? It's who wants to take what? And how are we all going to combine to get the job done?
And that's what I like that you do, Dennis, is like you said, you're bringing them into that adult world. You're not just saying, well, number one, will you do this? Or even you have to do this.
Yes.
Because adults don't do that. I don't go to my husband typically, unless it's something that's his area of responsibility, but I don't go to him and say, I'm busy, you have to make dinner. Or, you know, I can't pick up the kids, you have to go do this. That's not how we approach it.
Yes. And there's one other point in this, Judy, goes back to one of your earlier questions that I want to touch on. And it has to do with when our kids come up to us with a situation and they'll say, Mom or Dad, what should I do? Okay. And if you're like me, I am a type A driver type. I've got the answer like this, right? And I want to just be efficient. Tell me, this is what
you're feeling. My pain, Dennis. You're feeling my pain.
Right? It's so fast, and it's the right answer. And okay, but that's not the way we move to the passenger seat. The way to the passenger seat is, before I answer your question with my perspective, I'd like to hear what you plan to do about it. Mm. What are your thoughts? And see, what this all does is it starts training the problem-solving mind.
Right.
If you talk to the business community of employers, what they'll tell you, one of the biggest issues with young people is they're not really necessarily wired to problem solve or to handle tough situations. Well, if it's because we always stepped in and told them what to do, well, then how would they have, you know, learned those responsibilities? So that's a way of wording things where they start perceiving you as a coach that can trust their decision-making skills. Woo, that's a confidence booster. You can do this, starting in middle school on, that is a huge parenting strategy.
And those two strategies are amazing. And I can see how they will really help our listeners start making that transition. And I know we could talk forever, but I'm going to have to cut us off. I'm going to tell Sandy to give us the 3 minute, not even, you get 2 minutes,
right,
Sandy, to wrap a bow on it.
All right. So we're going to go back real quick. One, as a society, we are not preparing our kids for launch. Part of that is the education. Part of it's the parents. But basically, as parents, we have power in taking control of what we do. So look at your parenting styles. If you're being a performance parent, a helicopter parent, or a buddy permissive parent, there are specific ways that will harm your child. So what you want to do is give them wings, not strings. I love that. Because you're going to train them to be self-confident. They'll be well-adjusted. They're going to be a future adult. So when you focus on that, then you are giving them what they need to succeed in this world. You're helping them build those leadership skills. It's okay to screw up because no parent is a perfect parent. But Dennis, you gave us three ways that we can focus on being the best parent we can be. One is keep our mind on the goal. Two is invest in our relationship with our child. And three is to help build their confidence. And a lot of this comes in this analogy of shifting from the driver to the passenger seat. And that was one of my favorite things from your book because I can feel the feelings that I felt sitting in the passenger seat when my children were driving and how scary that was. And it reminds me that that's okay. That was how they learned to drive. So as a parent, I can still have those feelings. And that's okay. Just let them drive. All right. So Dennis, there's the summary. Now, the question is, though, because there's so much here, people are going to want to find out more from you. Obviously, we'll have the book on our website and you have it available. It's on Amazon. But if people wanted to get more from you, follow you, learn more about what you're doing, where can they do that?
You bet. Well, I would encourage people, first of all, the main landing page for our websites is lifesmartpublishing.com. And what that'll do is give you the option of going to our two different websites. One's called parentingforthelaunch.com. The other is dennistratine.com. We also have a weekly newsletter and blog. And I would encourage your audience to go on our website and you'll see a section on the side, sign up for our weekly e-newsletter. We have 5 years of weekly blogs that we've written that are all about these types of topics. How do you build leadership skills? How do we parent better? You know, you name it, it's all there. So a massive topic library. We're also on Facebook. I have a fan page. So if you go on Facebook and you see Dennis Tratine Fan, you can like that, and then you'll get a lot of our posts, and our newsletters get posted on there as well. We'd love just to help your audience in any way, and we believe in the work you guys are doing. So thank you for Mighty Parenting and the work you're doing.
Thanks. And all of those things that you just rifled through will be on MightyParentingPodcast.com for this episode. And I have had such a great time learning about how I can do a better job at raising my teens and 20-somethings to succeed in the real world. Thank you, Dennis, so much. It is time to dig into Real Talk, where we are discussing how to ask for what you want right after these quick messages.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dacium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy. So welcome back to the Real Talk portion of the podcast. Judy and I were talking a little bit, and, you know, Mother's Day comes and goes, and, well, people are whining about what they got to do or what they didn't get to do and what happened. And so in talking, as you guys know, I'm the what's the root cause, got to solve the problem person. And while I'm working on that, I'm still kind of there. And what I go is, did they know what you wanted? Did you ever tell them? And the answer is almost always no. So Judy and I thought, you know, this is a good real talk topic, is asking for what you want. Because it's really hard. Don't you think? I mean, especially parents, dads and moms, and I know women are really horrible at it, but I see dads who have that problem too. No one wants to say, this is what I want.
Well, it's almost as if you feel guilty that to ask for what you want, because we are so used to being, as parents, we're used to being givers. And we assume, my dad used to always say that, what does assume mean? And we all know, but we assume that other people know what we need. Mm-hmm. And I am guilty of this, you know, in all the 27 years that I've been married to my husband, I assume even now that he should know what I need or what I want. And the reality is, while I'm really good at picking up on other people's needs and figuring out what's the thing they want, that is not a skill set of his. And for me to assume that he should know what's going on up in my brain and what I need only sets me up for disappointment. So
yeah, it does. And the other thing that's really interesting as you were saying that is I'm thinking, truthfully, a lot of times I think we don't even really know what we want.
We know what we don't want.
Yeah, we know what we don't want. And we know sort of like we can verbalize vaguely, oh, I want to spend the day with my family. Well, what does that even mean? You know, so maybe before something important happens in your life, whatever it is, but if you know that something's important to you, like if Mother's Day, it's really important to you that you go see your mom, or this year it was really important to me that I went to see my grandma, you know, that just, the woman's over 100, this isn't going to last forever. That was what I wanted for Mother's Day. But I was able to take the stress off my family by going, this is what I really want for Mother's Day. Aside from that, you guys don't need to do a bunch of stuff. You don't need to buy me things. You don't need to take me anything. You letting me take off, or, you know, some of them can come with me, some of them can't because I don't just go for the day. But, you know, it's that communication piece. As much as we talk about communicating with our kids to build that relationship, here's a place that we can model good communication. Self-awareness, you know, what is it that I want in expressing it to your family? And then also going, how does that sit with you guys? Because they might have a need to do something in particular for you.
Right. And for the love of God, when they ask you what you want, don't go, oh, it doesn't matter, when it really does. Because I have done that. And then I get disappointed and go, but I told them it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And so if it matters, if it's important to you, you have to ask for what you want. Period.
Yep.
Going back to our, what show did we learn about the perfect pause or the perfect
period? With Eric. I can't remember the number.
I think it was 11.
Working with difficult peoples, right?
Yes.
If it wasn't 11, it was right around there, and it was difficult, you know, difficult families. So listen to that one. You'll hear about the powerful period.
Yes. And don't be the difficult family.
And don't be the difficult family.
That person. Ask for what you want. Be specific. Don't do a broad swoop. Oh, I would just love to have a day where I could relax. No, I would love to have a day where I go have a massage, you cook dinner, and I can sit on my butt all day. That's what I want. Be specific and direct in your asking, and then receive. I think that's the other half.
That is.
We don't receive. We go, push, oh, it's okay. You know, whatever. Receive it, embrace it, do it. That's all. You know, is there anything else you want to say on that? Because I think it's just direct.
We're keeping this one simple. We'll be coming back to this in other ways later on, but our point is made. And practice with your birthday, practice with Mother's Day, practice on the little ones. We'll talk about big holidays and weddings and Christmas and all that some other time.
Exactly. And thank you so much for joining us for this episode. And if you like what you heard today, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, and share. That's how we reach other families that are in the same place that you are. If it's your first time listening, we are excited that you're here and want you to know that Mighty Parenting is so much more than just a podcast. We're a community that's here to help you raise your teens and parent your young adults. So if you're looking for something, head on over to mightyparenting.com and find exactly what you need to move forward. And until next time, this is Judy Davis,
and Sandy Fowler, encouraging you to become a mighty parent.